Hello, Sheldon Renan. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Gino?
Well, I'm doing fine. I want to welcome you to upcoming discs, and we got to see Killing of America just yesterday.
it's not easily forgotten, is it?
No, it's absolutely not. And obviously, one of the reasons for this thing coming out now is the fact that violence is such a big deal in our headlines today, and I'm sure it's not lost on you that some of these same questions have been around for a long time.
Too long.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's getting worse.
Yeah, it definitely is. So let me ask you a question. So where did this idea come from back in the 80s? What spurred you doing this?
Well, it really was not my idea. I was really a kind of a hired gun, kind of a director Sherpa brought in to go out and film and interview and find material. The idea started with Len Schrader, the writer of the film and the producer of the film.
Yeah.
And Len had lived in Japan, and he knew that Faces of Death had been a huge hit in Japan, and he met a producer from Japan and moved to the United States. It was kind of an adventurous, a more artistic producer as opposed to a Roger Corman or B-movie producer who liked to work on things that were very edgy.
Right.
And he liked to work with young directors, and at the time I was young. So I met Len at his brother Paul's house at a party celebrating the green lighting of Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
I also, Paul, Len, and I were all had some involvement with the Japanese film studios. I had done a TV series and built the world's largest collection of Japanese films at the Pacific Film Archive at UC Berkeley. We got along pretty well. I was helping them in the beginning. I was just helping them, helping Len and Maka find footage.
Right.
Because they were having trouble finding it, and I put some together and arranged a screening to show it to them. And because I was able to do that pretty fast, in a couple of days, they then asked me if I would help them make this. So I directed it, and also they used my company as kind of the producing vehicle and the editing vehicle for it. So from beginning to end, I came in. But it was definitely Len Schrader's idea, and it was definitely Len Schrader's vision, and it was Len who did the final cut of both the American version and the Japanese version. In Japan, it was a huge hit. It was, I think, the seventh largest box office grosser that year.
Wow.
And that was true in almost every country where it played. It was, to this day, it's considered a kind of a sleeper in places like Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But the one country that it was about didn't want to show it because it was basically shocking.
Right.
To have footage like that at the time. Nobody had seen anything like that. Because the other films, Mondo films, were largely sensationalistic or staged.
Sure.
And this was actually a serious documentary which asked a lot of questions.
Right.
Dealt not only with the statistics of murder and kind of the spectacle of murder, but the personality of the people who committed murder.
Right.
What it was that led them to do it, what they thought about it. And in the end, we were able to get into Vacaville Prison to interview Ed Kemper.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it's still the most astonishing footage imaginable.
Yeah.
To have a person who had killed people like this.
Yes.
Beheaded them and played with their...
Mm-hmm.
You take baths with their heads. Talk to you and tell you exactly what was going through his mind.
Right.
And at the end of the interview, reached down beside his chair, picked up a pair of glasses, put them on, and said, "These are the glasses that I always wore when I killed the women." I nearly fell out of my chair.
Yeah. A bit chilling.
It was chilling. At the same time, he was a charming guy. He was a nice guy. Except that he was, of course, 6'8" and weighed about 260 pounds. And nobody that you wanted to mess with.
Right. Well, that was a common element, particularly in the 70s, of the serial killers then. I've taught criminal law here for quite a bit, and when we cover serial killers, that's the one thing that seems to come across is some of these people were bright, intelligent, very charming people, Ted Bundy, of course, being the ultimate of that. So it's not surprising, I guess, that someone like this can appear that way in one part, but when you listen to his words, you realize this is a person on a totally different plane.
He was considered a genius at homicide.
Right.
But they finally got him.
Yeah. Now, the footage in this film, I mean, obviously there's some footage there that we've all seen before, particularly with some of the serial killers, but there's a lot of local events, small events that I've never even heard of happening, that you managed to cull together. Tell me about the process of finding all this obscure footage, finding this footage, and deciding, you know, how to put it together.
Well, when you do something like this, you have an overall narrative structure. You have something that you want to communicate.
Right.
A story that you want to tell. And then you look for all the various stories.
Right. Yeah, they were kind of all over the place. And, you know, that's one of the things that struck me a little bit stark. Some of these images are incredibly disturbing, and even from the ones you guys shot at the morgue to some of this lost, local network news footage. But then I noticed at one point you go a little bit light. There's the story about the guy who applied for a loan, didn't get it, and he walks around with this guy for 3 days, you know, basically grandstanding. And of course, that to me, I don't know, maybe it's because everything else was so stark and so horrifying. That to me almost seemed comical. Was it intended to lighten it up?
It was played with comedy music, if you remember, kind of slapstick music.
Yeah, I remember that. And I'm wondering if the intent was that you thought that because there was such, you know, horrifying pictures here, you needed something to give people just a little bit of a break.
We did, and so you'll notice that there is a lot of change of pace.
Yeah.
In the film, both with music, with sound effects, and with documentary footage.
Right.
And sometimes with montages. His story, I'm trying to remember his name.
Yes, it's not tip of my tongue as well, but...
was a Greek bartender.
Yeah.
He was declared not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right.
Went into a sanitarium for about 9 or 10 years, and then was released and lived the rest of his life. Lived the rest of his life happy.
Right.
And kept that shotgun as a souvenir.
Wow.
Which he would show to anybody who visited him.
Yeah. Now.
And just as this film is coming out.
Yeah.
John Hinckley was released.
Yes. Absolutely. That's kind of a big story right now.
His parents.
Yeah.
Kind of an ironic full circle. The thing which impelled him to make the assassination mm-hmm. he had an infatuation with Jodie Foster as a result of seeing
yes.
her in Taxi Driver.
Right.
And the whole idea of the film began at a party to start Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were putting all this footage together and you had this kind of narrative in mind, did you run into moments where you had something that maybe didn't fit the narrative, but you thought, we have to use this. This is too important to not include?
Sometimes we went out to shoot framing material.
Right.
You won't see it in the American version. You'll see it, however, in the preview of Coming Attractions, in
mm-hmm.
the American version, and you'll see it in the Japanese version. Originally, it was meant to open the American version.
Right.
We filmed at the Grand Canyon. We filmed wild Mustangs
mm-hmm.
Running on the floor of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
From helicopter. We spotted them, herded them to a place where we could shoot.
Uh-huh.
There was room to get the helicopter right next to them.
Yeah.
And so there was some of that. Sometimes, but by and large, it was just looking for things that would illustrate
your narrative.
Ideas of
right.
Lynn's ideas about what had happened to what was happening to the country and to the people.
Yeah.
But also his fascination with the murderers.
Yeah.
Was the idea because the one thing that we knew that I found when I did the original research before I started directing at UCLA
mm-hmm.
was that almost every human being thinks about murder almost every day.
Well, that's fascinating.
We all get mad.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody. Or we've been mad for a long time.
Right.
But we don't do it. Very few people do it. When it comes time for people to do it, as Noguchi said, usually there's a lot of self-loathing.
Right.
Well, somebody can either commit suicide or kill somebody else. It's a kind of a switch that has to be thrown.
Sure.
This isn't true in all cases, of course.
And that's
clear that killing somebody is just yeah. enormously destructive. I had lunch with the head psychologist for the LAPD,
mm-hmm.
and he told me that every policeman who's involved in a shooting incident will retire within 4 years. Usually from a stress-related illness.
Sure. Yeah, I can get
other people who have killed people either for the government or for whatever reason.
Right.
Told me confidentially that after their first murder, they pulled over to the side of the road and threw up.
Right.
An assassin for an intelligence service coming to the U.S. said that every life you take takes years off your own
right.
life.
It's a
kind of a taboo subject. It's we have to deal with it because
sure.
there's too much of it.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I did notice watching this film that kind of brought me back to the present is while, yes, there's all the violence and the issues that we have today, one thing I did notice is you look at the 60s, and we had a lot of political-type assassinations, civil rights leaders, presidents, presidential candidates. Today, we have, I think, more vitriol than ever in our political system, but you haven't seen that since Reagan. Can you explain that, or is that just because technology to protect people's gotten better?
The technology check people has gotten better. But I want to say something that I've learned from people who did this kind of thing for a living.
Yeah.
And everybody I talked to who claimed at least to have been in this world
right.
Received their training from the government.
Okay.
They may not be doing it now for the government, but they started doing it for the government. The definition of a quality hit is a situation where somebody dies, but nobody has been murdered.
Okay. You want to expound on that a little bit?
Most assassinations are not identified as assassinations.
Oh, okay. The old make it look like an accident.
It's make it look like an accident.
Right.
A heart attack, a hunting accident.
Mm-hmm. So now you brought this film. It hasn't really had a proper release in America before. Now it's being released in America. What is it you're hoping people walk away with from this?
That they really have got to understand that this is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
That it's dangerous for everybody.
Right.
That you can't
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you've got to take care of people. If you don't take care of people when they're young, you're not going to like what you get when they get old.
Well, that's true. I've always said build schools or prisons, one or the other.
Yeah. And there's a lot of murders that happen in prisons, but they're not
sure.
counted as murders.
Right. Well, I guess finally the thing I'd have to ask is, all these years later, if you were making this film today, how would you approach it differently, and what would be different about this film if it were depicting our time?
You can't... You know, that's a very good question, and I've been asking myself that as I look at this film.
I'm sure.
I think there might be... there would be more about school killings.
Yeah. Sure.
Than serial killers. And serial killers, as a rule, prey typically on people who are not who are people that society doesn't care about. So it's unattended children.
Often true, yeah.
It's prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's women.
Yeah.
So I guess what I would want to do is to focus more and point out the degree to which women are not cared for.
Mm-hmm.
Not treated, not protected.
Right.
Today, among a certain macho segment of the population.
Right, but it comes back to that same theme that you mentioned earlier of we need to protect people more, and you would change maybe the group of people we need to focus our attention on now.
And that we should focus on making certain that people get treated well when they're young.
Sure.
And that people do not have the grab a gun when they're angry.
Well, that would be a difficult task.
The most recent statistics that I heard just recently is when you introduce a gun into a household, you decrease the safety of the household. You do not increase it.
Well, it's true that people have had their own guns turned on themselves, but if guns were the problem, how would you explain that cities like Chicago, for instance, that are having the most egregious gun violence, have some of the toughest gun laws, however?
Because it's not an isolated area. The guns are purchased outside Chicago.
Right.
When we were making the film, you had Detroit on one side of the water.
Yeah.
In the United States. And at that time, Detroit had the second highest homicide rate.
Mm-hmm.
And right across, you had a population which was very, very similar to the population that was in Detroit. You had automobile factories. You had white blue-collar workers.
Mm-hmm.
But you had 10 times as much homicide in Detroit where people could get guns as you did in Canada where they could not.
Right.
And in Australia where they really finally, the politicians were courageous enough to simply stop the easy access to guns,
mm-hmm.
mass shootings immediately stopped and have not started again.
Well, you certainly leave us with some sobering thoughts with this documentary. It's something that probably every American should see, and it's too bad that we didn't see it, 40 years ago when you originally put it out. But that's being altered now, and we're looking forward to the Severn Blu-ray. It's coming out, and I thank you for taking the time to talk to me about it, and hope people get to see it.
I want people to see it, and if they're capable, some people it really upsets. There's some people who simply shouldn't see this. People that have had early violence in their life, they're probably gonna find it very disturbing. But you can't run from things. You have to understand what's really going on.
Well, I think you'll find it disturbing even if you haven't had incidents of violence in your own life.
Towards the end of the film, the crew suddenly said to me, "We're not going out anymore without bulletproof vests."
Yeah.
I'd been pinned down by gunfire one time.
Wow.
Too many. So we got bulletproof vests for everybody, and even I wore.
Well, thank God nobody got hurt making the film.
Nobody got hurt. I think that everybody ended up with PTSD.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. That's definitely a whole other discussion, I'm sure. But we're glad to have the film out, and I want to thank you for taking the time to share it with us.